So today we are here with Matthew Blackburn, who is the creator of both Survivor and Survivors, two fan films that have made their debut only 7 years apart. We'll ask you about that in just a second. All right, so first, Matt, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you live? What do you do? What have you done?
I've lived in Southern California pretty much my whole life, traveled a little bit, but always seemed to come back here. You know, I'd always been interested in film, and I was taking the film production option at Cal State University Northridge, and, you know, about halfway through, I thought, because I was just in these classes, and I remember the moment for me was I was in a class, and I was already writing screenplays before I went into the program, because some wonderful young lady that was in one of my classes at community college, I think we were supposed to write a screenplay, and she said, "Oh, I have this CD called Final Draft." And, you know, I thought, "Oh, okay, what does it do?" It puts it in screenwriting format. So then I just started popping out all kinds of screenplays. But when I was in a class that was about writing short films, something that I'd done a few of, and I remember we were watching a scene that was from The Wizard of Oz, and I hear this little chatter in the background. And I'm always the type of person that tends to take things in, observe, measure, calculate. Well, not so much calculate, but I like to think about things before, you know, I do things. And I hear from behind me somewhere, "Worst cut on action ever." And I thought, this is The Wizard of Oz. And that's all you see? So yeah, I'm assuming it was somebody who probably had a background in editing or whatever. But, you know, I edit, and I've edited everything that I've ever made, and I've edited a few other things as well. And, you know, I have always been under the impression that if a story works, you don't notice that stuff. And honestly, you know, I've seen The Wizard of Oz I don't know how many times. It's a wonderful film. And I never notice if there is an editing issue. I've never seen it, but that moment right there said to me that I think I want to really focus on writing, because I didn't really see that there was anything. And I'm not trying to, you know, brag or anything. I mean, I think that my technical abilities leave a lot to be desired, but I didn't see a real future going into the production option, because I thought, well, if it's something technical, I can probably learn it myself at some point. But what I would really like to get better at is just telling stories, because if you don't have a story that means something, then the entire whatever it is you're doing, a short film, a feature, will just fall apart. So from that point, I was far enough along in the classes to where I switched over to screenwriting, and I continued through that program, and you know, got my bachelor's and my master's. And so,
you have a master's in screenwriting?
Oh yeah, I have a master's in screenwriting.
So are you a screenwriter?
I am, but I'm in that interesting position where I have written many screenplays. I've optioned several of them, but you know how it goes. Until one of them outright gets produced, you know, your credits are usually small.
You're a stereotype, a person walking around with a screenplay in your hand.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, I mean, I've always had a love of storytelling, but genre storytelling, and the screenplays that I've written, yeah, they're all in different genres. You know, I've written a lot of science fiction, action, some horror, and you know, some period stuff, and most of the stuff that is under option is in the horror and a little little bit of the period genres, but you know how it is. You have things that are dangerously close to being produced, and you bide your time and do your many, many rewrites as different actors are being considered. And
they still pay you in the meantime?
Well, I suppose how it goes is that the real payoff happens when something gets produced. But that's also why I split my time, because, I mean, I love films, I love storytelling, but also I have a great affinity for mentoring young ones. I also work as an educator, and I work with middle school kids, and a lot of times we will make short film projects as part of our experience, and so those are some of the things that I do.
You're a screenwriter, you're a teacher, and in 2010 you brought out a fan film called Survivor. What made you create a Star Trek fan film?
When I was going to make the original Star Trek Survivor, you know, before you had to say Survivor, a Star Trek fan film or fan production.
Yeah, this is 6.5 years before the guidelines. I think people will, you know, forgive you for making.
When I first had the idea for that, it wasn't a Star Trek short at all. It was an original science fiction short film that I had written. It was significantly different, but at the same time, not quite as interesting. I had all these elaborate effects and alien costumes and all these things that were going to be done by somebody that had a background in effects that I went to school with. But they pulled out, and so I had a lot less to work with than I did. And I thought, well, I really wanted to do this, but now I can't. So then, you know, the problem-solving brain gets going, which I think is really, you know, when you're making a short or making a feature, making any kind of movie, it's always about problem-solving. So I thought, all right, I have this script I wrote, and I think it has a core of a pretty good story. You have some space marine guy left on a planet, and there's a crazy person that's been left there, and it becomes a conflict.
Don't give a spoiler. People may not have seen it yet. So.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, this was the original, so it all got rewritten anyway. So what I did, I don't remember where the epiphany came from where I said, well, why don't I just make it Star Trek? I think I know what it was. I had a uniform. I had one of those, later season Deep Space Nine uniforms, First Contact, whatever.
The Halloween costume that had the little dickie that you wore.
Mm-hmm. And I saw that and thought, wait a minute, I have that. I never got rid of my Playmates tricorder or phaser. And I thought, well, gosh, you know, if I go to the places I had planned to go anyway, which I lived around the Antelope Valley area, so there was, you don't have to go very far to find mountains, deserts, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So,
well, I know if you went to Vasquez Rocks, I can easily recognize that.
Yeah, Vasquez Rocks is just a place I've always liked to go, period. And I hadn't planned to go there until it became a Star Trek fan film. And really all it was you know, it's smallest crew imaginable. You have, you know, it was same as in this one. It was just me, Dan, and Katie. And I think the Vasquez Rocks was just me and my friend Dan. And he was behind camera, and I did various scenes of climbing rocks and all that kind of stuff. And
did you go so far as to actually, like, you know, get a permit or anything, or did you just
No way.
Okay.
Couldn't afford it. No, this was complete guerrilla filmmaking.
I think that's about $2,000. So I was just wondering.
Yeah, $2,000 for a movie that was free? I don't think so.
I know this because I once was with a film crew that actually did get a permit to shoot for most of the day on Vasquez Rocks, and it was interesting because we actually had a ranger there with us who was specifically keeping other people away from us for the shoot. It was some Canadian or Australian something doing, they were doing something on fan film, well, not fan films, on Star Trek fans. So we had a bunch of people from the local Star Trek fan club, the USS Angeles, that were up there.
Mm.
And it was just, we had never had such VIP treatment there before. You know, they were all there in our uniforms, and they're filming us from this angle,
wow,
that angle. They're doing interviews with us. I mean, it wasn't even like, you know, real episode filming. That they filmed us sort of like having fun, as if this was one of our club activities. Because we do actually go to Vasquez Rocks every so often. We have fun there, but like we were staging the fun. But yeah, for like I think, you know, 4 hours or so, we were just we were unaccosted by any other kinds of tourists, which is unusual for a nice day at Vasquez Rocks. So sometimes you just have like all the people climbing up on there, and you try to take photos, like,
yeah,
all these little ants at the top. It's like, oh man, gotta Photoshop those out later.
Well, as I recall, I think about 4 hours is what we spent originally at Vasquez Rocks on Survivor, and nobody bothered me. Nobody bothered anybody, but there was only two of us.
Yeah, it's different when you have, like, a whole film crew, you know.
Oh, yeah, that definitely calls more attention. So, yeah, just went up there and shot a whole bunch of stuff, and then went to another location I knew pretty well that I've used in other – actually, I've used it a lot. It's out on the way to Gorman, I guess. And it's just these really cool volcanic rocks. I've used them in several shorts that I've made. And I even matched that to Vasquez Rocks. It's funny, there's this one scene where I'm taking water out of a little depression in the rocks, which was real, and it went to Vasquez Rocks after it had rained, so I knew that this one little depression there would fill up with water. So it was great, because I had written, you know, that there was a gag where I drank some bad water and had a reaction, which I'm surprised doesn't happen.
I was wondering if that was Vasquez Rocks, because I was looking at that water. It's like, but wait a second, there's never water at Vasquez Rocks. But man,
that was, the water that was in the rocks, that was shot at Vasquez Rocks. When I cut my hands and get the water, that was shot way the heck elsewhere, which we just, you know, cheated and faked it.
I didn't
it was about
know.
Half and half. But we tried to match the shots as much as possible. I think you can tell because Vasquez Rocks is a lot smoother, and you know, this other place is more, you know, hard and angular and volcanic looking. But I hope that it at least you don't notice that.
I mean, you know, as you said, it's a good story. You know, you watch it, and you know, I'm not going to give away too much of a spoiler, but you know, there's enough of you kind of wandering as a survivor across the surface of the planet, climbing and drinking the bad water or whatever. But before that gets really, really boring, then you bring in the second character, who in the original you said was crazy guy. We actually know now.
Yeah, it was
different than that.
In the non-Star Trek version, it was supposed to be, you know, they were, I guess, part of like the same unit or whatever, and but one person had been stranded there for significantly longer. That was totally changed. In Survivor, I wrote it as a Vulcan, which was a lot more interesting to me. I'm not going to say what happens, but just writing dialogue for a Vulcan is really fun. I find a lot of times I'll overwrite it, which was interesting because years later with, I guess you'd call it the sequel that's out now, Survivors, there is a Vulcan who is the same actor, but he's, you know, we say it's his brother.
Amazing family resemblance there, I have to say.
Oh, yeah, stunning resemblance. They're twins. But, man, with writing Vulcan dialogue, making that 15-minute time limit that you now have as part of the Paramount CBS guidelines, that was, in editing, that was, I'm not going to say it was difficult, but it was time-consuming. It really...
Literally time-consuming.
Yes.
You're consuming time, but yes, go ahead.
But it was, I know I'm skipping through the whole shooting process, but in the editing, it took longer than I normally would take, but I think that helped it because I really had to consider the value of every individual thing that occurred in Survivors to make that 15 minutes. And a lot of what got cut was dialogue, a lot of dialogue. That the scene initially where I guess I'm playing the captain, and I'm sitting on the rock in the woods with my Vulcan officer, and we have a back and forth. I don't know what it is in the final movie. It's maybe less than a minute. But originally it was 5 or 6 minutes of dialogue. And I guess what happened was and I find that this happens a lot when you're filming or when you write something versus when you film it, and you have to put on a different hat. When I wrote the script for Survivors, I thought I needed all that. I thought that I needed the exposition and the reason why the planet was important and, you know, the reason that the aliens were there. And I thought I needed all of that explanation. And what's the thing that I completely cut out? All the explanation. If I had left it in, then it would be a 25-minute movie probably, because also the scene in the cave went on significantly longer.
I think it all worked better, being shorter and tighter. You know, I have a rule on fan film factor, the two rule prime directive. Rule number one, there's no such thing as a bad fan film. And rule number two, if you see a bad fan film, refer to rule number one. But that being said, one of the things I see again and again in fan films, or at least, pre-guidelines, was things that just went on way too long. And folks that really sort of fell in love with what they had written. And that being said, I realized the, irony of me saying this, since people know that I tend to write very, very long blog entries. And, I've been teased for that. And, I'm well aware of it. And I think it was Mark Twain who once said, "I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have the time."
Yes.
And I know exactly what that means. I mean, people laugh at that. But, if you're a good writer, you write a whole bunch, and then you spend time, chopping it up and figuring out, Sophie's Choice, which paragraphs to get out. And that takes a very, very long time. With my blog, it's very, it's difficult to do that. That makes it, much longer than it would take to
blog, in your defense, your blog makes for a very good read, because there's all that extra, detail, which,
Oh, as they say in the South, bless your heart.
Well, yeah, I've read a few of your posts, and, I don't complain.
Somebody read my post. That's awesome. Go ahead.
But yeah, I guess it's something that you have to develop, and because I have a lot of experience with writing, especially screenplays, and I know most of writing is editing. It's refining. I could pop out a first draft. Really funny story. The original, because I had a script maybe 2 years before I made Survivors. And then just other stuff happened in life, and I wasn't able to do it. But the original was the original version of Survivors was going to be called. Yeah, it was going to be called Star Trek Hero Complex, and the script was something like 28 pages. It was really dark, really cerebral. I don't remember the name of the episode, but since I'm not going to make it, I'll just spoil it. It involved a similar marooning on a planet with aliens pursuing, but that was all a construct that was being placed in the captain's mind so that he would give up secrets and codes and things. There was a character who embodied everything that the captain kind of worshipped, that Jeremiah Johnson survivalist Western, real American man type of survivalist. So there was a character like that who would team up with the captain. And, they go through all these adventures. And then in the end, you find out that the entire time our captain has been on a table with some kind of nodule connected to his head where, these different aliens are creating this scenario so that he would be so enamored and trusting of this representation of everything that he admires that he would give up certain information. But it went a lot. It was a lot darker. It was more surreal. It did things I've always wanted to do in you know, something that I've made, which is to go between different planes of reality, especially within the mind. Very ambitious. You know, I ran that script by by Dan and Katie, and of course, you know, my friend Dan is usually down for anything, and he said, "Can my part be bigger?" And then I think it was Katie that said, "There's no way you're going to be able to do this," because there was, I don't know, probably like 25 characters. There was going in between, travel almost like the Nexus, you know, traveling through different levels of reality. And while I think it was a very good script, it was also very self-serious, and I had a lot of stuff that occurred to where that kind of got put in the drawer for a while. But I had already gotten, you know, the uniforms. I'd already gotten kind of the preliminary what the aliens would look like. Very simple costume, you know, just those masks, motocross armor, and some alien hands. I think I even had purchased that alien machete thing, and so I had the costuming and all that probably 2 years before I shot it. And then, you know, I went off and did a few other things and did a lot of writing and rewriting of different projects. And it still was kind of nipping at me, you know, like, I want to make that. I want to make that. And I'd open my closet and see all those costumes and be like, oh, man, that's reason alone. You know, reason alone to make it is because you're cheap. And you went and bought all these costume things and, you know, you got to use them for something. So what I did was, I said, all right, I have two alien costumes. I have two really good uniforms. I have to rewrite this to where I use what I have. And I made it less of the super serious, you know, dark, cerebral story, and more of kind of what I felt like at the time. 'Cause I was going through not a real great time, you know. My dad was he had cancer, and I just kind of wanted to do something fun. So if Survivors feels kind of like a buddy movie, that's why. And any opportunity where we could have humor, whether it worked or not, we put it in as much as possible. So I completely rewrote it, and I rewrote this 28-page script down to an 11-page script, which the only thing that the two versions have in common is the scene where they decide to use the Vulcan officer as bait so they can lay a trap for the two aliens. That is the only thing that stayed. Everything else was totally, completely rewritten. But even then, my shooting script for Survivors, the front end of it kept changing. I had scenes that were set inside the ship, and I was going to build a set and, you know, have a bunch of 4th of July sparklers and, you know, build some little cardboard hallways and corridors and, you know, red lights for red alert, and just have a scene where the captain's going to go down with the ship, but then he sees that Vulcan officer who is, you know, related to the Vulcan from the previous movie. And so I didn't end up shooting that. And I also had a beginning that I always thought I needed, and then it turned out I didn't, where there was going to be a counselor that was kind of evaluating, you know, the captain. And getting the idea, because, I mean, it was going to be a Betazoid, getting the idea that he wasn't entirely truthful what happened on that planet or left out certain things. So it was going to be this, you know, weight on his shoulders that was something he'd have to unload during the course of the main action. So yeah, again, all that backstory and all those extra things just, you know, got rid of it.
And how do you feel about the fact that you got rid of it? Do you feel, you know, like you've, you know, chosen which one of your children, you know, can't survive, or, you know, do you feel like, oh, thank God, feng shui, I've gotten rid of it?
You know, I'm probably more thankful I got rid of it, because I do think the pacing is pretty good. I'm pretty happy with how the movie flows. When I was editing it, one thing that you know, my co-conspirators were always saying is, I cannot believe how much happens in this 15 minutes, because this is a short film, and I don't even know, like, we have 6 or 7 action sequences, all in the span of 15 minutes, and you know, I don't think that there's ever a lull. There certainly was in the first couple of cuts, but you know, we got rid of all that. And when we had started filming, you know, we had a really small crew, 3 people, and 2 of those would be on camera at any given time. So really, we would have 1 person operating camera while the other 2 people played scenes. And we all took turns playing an alien. So if that, and that's the reason that I get knocked out during the fight. Because there wasn't enough people to do camera setups involving 3 people on screen. And any time there is more than 2 people on screen, it's because we have a tripod. But the really one of the funny things, and I guess this has happened because I did another short film called Old Gun New West, where I had characters in masks, and that's where I got the idea to have the aliens have masks, because if they're wearing a mask, anybody can play it. There is a scene in Survivors where, you know, the alien pops up between the 2 officers and, you know, throws one and punches the other, me, I play the captain. So I get hit in the face by the alien and knocked out. Well, that was me playing the alien, and I knock myself out. because, yeah, and I thought, well, I'll just swing this fist towards the camera, and then I'll show my face going, wah, and fall back, and everybody did their own stunts. And so, yeah, most, I'd say that when the alien is fighting the Vulcan, it's me. When I fight the alien, it's Dan. And any time that you see, you know, 3 people, then, you know, Katie would reluctantly put on the alien costume. It was very hot. We were in the middle of summer in July, but we were up in the mountains, so it wasn't too hot. But once you put on that latex mask and the motocross, and you're covered head to toe wearing black, I found that... even though I did all the sound effects of the alien gurgles and noises, it was kind of funny because probably more so me than anybody else, but because I guess I was in the costume for a long time because it was really hard to get the mask on over my big head. So once it's on, it's staying on. And I was always, it's funny because I got teased a little bit by, you know, by my friends while we were shooting, because I was always making alien noises while I was in the alien costume. It was always like, and they're like, why are you doing that? You're going to replace it anyway. I said, because I can't breathe. Because the mask was just so cumbersome that you had to suck in large amounts of air to even be able to function. And so, yeah, we shot for, I want to say, about 6 different trips, 6 different days. And
were they consecutive, or did you just, like, you know, pick different weekends when you guys were all available?
Yeah, that was exactly it. We just, whenever our schedules aligned. And then there was one day where we had more than three people, and that's where we get Cameron, who played the lost crewman. And he's actually wearing the uniform from the original Survivor, because we didn't have two of the really nice quality ones that that me and Dan wore throughout the thing. And
I was gonna ask about that extra Survivor, because like, well, that wasn't a Katie. He didn't look like a Katie.
No, no, she was behind the camera the majority of the time, and I really have to credit her for getting some pretty good shots, because there was this one moment, it was really funny. Me and Dan are doing our fight thing, and I'm in the alien costume, and I'm probably getting a few too many shots of me choking him against a tree. And then, you know, we hear this little voice behind us that says, "Hey, guys, well, whatever you're doing, can you do it in this direction? Because the sun is setting and it looks really cool." So then that entire sequence, which ended up being my favorite scene in the movie, where, you know, the Vulcan is backing up and the alien's coming after him and he fires at him five or six times with no effect. And then the sun and the rays of light are coming behind him. I mean, that was just because Katie had said, "Hey, it looks cool in this direction. Go over there. Hurry up." So we altered our entire fight choreography to accommodate what ended up being a pretty good shot.
Now, what kind of camera equipment were you using?
This is the Canon 7D. It's the same camera that I shot my previous short film, Old Gun New West, on, and I really used everything that I already had. I mean,
an old TOS phaser for the Next Generation era.
Oh, yeah. There's a reason why we used the original series phaser, and it's funny because so many scripted lines were cut, and yet all of the improvised ones were left in. I really didn't like, because I know you got to use official stuff. Well, after the original Survivor, I had sold all the props. I sold my little Playmates tricorder and phaser, which I think that was a pretty good phaser. And so then I had to buy stuff back. And I ended up getting the same model tricorder, which I probably should have used more. But, you know, when we're up there, you know, going to war in the woods, we weren't thinking about, hey, what are some other opportunities to use a tricorder? The Next Generation phaser, which I guess was an official product, wasn't necessarily very good quality. So getting two of them didn't really make sense to me. I liked the original series phaser a lot more, but you know, then we just improvised the line. It was Dan's line. He came up with it. It was something about you know, this is not the time to indulge in your fondness for antiques. And then, you know, I replied, old Earth proverb, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That was just something we made up as a way of getting away with using a phaser that is from the original series, which just looked better.
Well, you had a lot of little sneaky things I noticed, you know, like, for example, both in Survivor and Survivors, you saved yourself from having to do really, really good Vulcan ear makeup by having the ears bleeding.
Yeah, that was deliberate. In Survivor, the Vulcan, you know, that was in the script because I knew that we were not going to do Vulcan ear makeup. Couldn't afford it, too cumbersome. And so I thought, you know, I thought, well, okay, Romulans, Vulcans, let's have it be like some kind of hate crime kind of thing. You know, they cut off the tips of his ears. And so we assume that that is what happened to him, you know, that it was the Romulans that did it as a way to show their superiority. And I think that kind of worked. I mean, and that's the original Survivor. I think it's pretty dark, but that fit with you know, that type of story. This one was a little bit lighter, and I think we do see the Vulcan ear, but very briefly. I wanted to cover that thing up as quickly as possible because what you do see of the Vulcan here, there was only one. So we had to very carefully angle his head.
You only had one Vulcan here. That's hysterical.
Yeah, we had, well, because it came in a package and, you know, bless him, you know, Dan went and got what he could get. And they didn't match. The ears, one was this little smushy thing and one was a decent sized one. So we decided to use the decent sized one. And hopefully, given too much away, the separation between his ear and the other ear, I thought, okay, we'll cover that up with a wound. And then in the next scene, he'll have a bandage, and we won't ever have to see pointed ears again.
Yeah, I don't consider that a spoiler too much, but, I mean, especially if people see the preview. But no, it's a cute little thing. I am going to give a spoiler, though. I'm sorry. If you guys are listening and you don't want to be spoiled, just, like, you know, jump ahead